Jason Saunders at Ataba, Alberta. I also sit on the Alberta Pulse Growers on trade actions. We've had trade actions with other crops. They haven't been on market-based problems, as most of the wheat board trade actions have been. They've been on phytosanitary issues, non-tariff trade barriers. Those trade actions exist on peas going into India, even grain into the U.S. It happened once. I guess the difference is we actually use Pulse Canada and the Canadian government on taxpayer expense to fight that battle for us, which is their job. Trade is part of the federal government mandate. So I do have a problem with the wheat board always fighting its own battles, and when other crops do get the benefit of having the government to help them in general fight the battle for them. The question I do have on the wheat board values with, excuse me, I have cold also. Oh, I lost my train of thought. The value of the board brings to the table. When you made the comment, Larry, that all of our grain we'd have problems with the U.S. because all of our grain would flood to the south if the market opened up. A lot of our grain would flow to the south when the markets opened up. I guess the wheat board does sell grain to the U.S. currently. We do have trade issues, but we sell other products. My question being, half the grain companies in Canada are owned by U.S. firms. They have no interest in having them empty up here. Why would we make the assumption in an open market that all the grain would flow south? There would be the Winnipeg Commodities Exchanges ready to put a market or futures contracts in place if the time comes. Why would we be under the assumption that magically our grain would flow south?
I know this isn't going to make you feel a lot better, Jason, but we did ask the federal government to share on the trade challenges with the U.S., and they declined. They did help us with U.S. advocacy, where we met with U.S. producers to try to reduce these pressures, and they shared that 50-50. You're right about grain flowing south. I don't think it will flow south all the time. There's no question about that. But there would be certain times and pressures when there'd be a lot of incentive for the grain to flow south. And right now is a good example, a time of rising prices.
Those prices would be here. If we had an open market, why magically would the U.S. price be this, Canadian price be this? And why are you thinking there would be a difference in an open market?
Well, we do have North American pricing for grains. And that North American pricing extends into Ontario, where the Ontario has the open market. And there's a price gradient where there can be advantages to moving grain south across the border. And I'm not suggesting that we would flood the U.S. market, because I don't think it's possible, and it wouldn't be wise. But the issue with trade challenges in the U.S. is that it's not the companies that institute the challenge, it's the producers of that crop. And it's very easy, and the American producers are very good at getting 62%, I believe is the magic number, of producers of that particular crop to sign up and start a trade challenge. That's all they have to do, is go to the International Trade Commission with 62% of the people signed up, and they've got an action. And with the Byrd Amendment, if they happen to get tariffs, and keep in mind, the U.S. International Trade Commission operates in a manner that they have a preliminary finding, and it's a guaranteed lock. A preliminary finding equals tariffs. If there's a complaint, there are tariffs. And then you have to come and defend. So that is how it works. And with the Byrd Amendment, the organization that makes the complaint gets to keep the tariffs. So in effect, if there is a tariff, it pays back the ammunition that they're shooting at us. So, you've got a valid point. I'm not assuming a lot of grain would flow south. I think we can get 10% in there, maybe more in cases when they have a drought year. But it's not a guaranteed thing.
It's been an interesting evening so far. Some questions have been asked. One of the things, though, that we got to look at, and Stephen, you mentioned it, is past history of the Canadian Wheat Board type of thing. But one of the things, maybe that's not mentioned too, is past history of the Western wheat growers, which both you and Con are directors of. And I mean, we got to take a look at this one too. In the past, a lot of farm organizations all across Canada have taken a stand on certain issues. And it seems like the wheat growers, to the most part, have taken an opposite stand. In fact, they've almost taken a court stand in some of them. And I'll mention some of those things. They backed the railroad position against open access. That was the Western Wheat Growers during the ESTE report. They also backed railroads in denial of actually capturing some efficiency gains. So we couldn't, as farmers, we cannot capture any efficiency gains that the railway has now. They've supported the grain companies when they wanted to license producer car spots, and Con, that probably probably drove you up the wall. Another thing, they've also supported the railroads and the grain companies against the FRCC's bid to gain the grain cars. Now, when it was proved that the FRCC was right and the maintenance figures that they were quoting were the right figures, the wheat growers' comment was, well, I guess they were right. Well, congratulations. But they've never taken any a responsibility for some of those actions that they've done. So I guess as a producer, I'm kind of wondering, and most producers out here are kind of wondering, with your position as a Western wheat grower and your stand on that and some of these issues, do we really trust your vision of what's going to happen to the grain industry? And another question that's sort of a part that ties into it too is most of us as farmers have been fighting for the right to make the decision on the board and have a plebiscite on barley. We had the force of plebiscite on barley. That wasn't going to come, in our opinion. We've also been working on a plebiscite for wheat. The government's position so far has been, well, any plebiscite is not binding, but we'll just make the decision. And it almost gives the impression that whatever farmers say, the government's going to do what they want. And I know you, Stephen, have made some statements in the past that said the government won't allow the wheat board to exist as it is. So those are two questions that I think I would like some answers to.
How do you answer that? They're not really questions on the group. I mean, I can talk about wild rose producers, but I mean, that's not what we're talking about tonight, right? We're talking about who we are, what we stand for on the wheat board. A lot of those things you talk about were before my time on the wheat growers. I've been there for a year. The wheat growers brought in the main people who brought in the producer pricing options, which are by far the most successful thing the wheat board's got going now. You talk about vision. The wheat board has no vision. 75 years, and what have we got? The same old thing. 8 years of people on there, of elected directors. Did it take 8 years to come up with these pricing options? I mean, we can come up with these pricing options. We're talking about daily price options, and all these options that we got with the daily price and producer direct sales. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's 5%. It's 500,000 tons it's limited to. So it's not an option. So that's my comment on that. I've been on the Uyghurs for a year. Some of those things I was not a part of. So I think we should maybe stick to how we individually feel about things.
I was asked this same question, our first debate we had. As far as Stephen and I both being directors of the wheat growers, I think it's a coincidence. Before we started this, Stephen was just on the board. I think I'd only met him at one meeting. As far as the group of directors that are there now, I'm the old fart on there. They're all young kids. They're probably the most optimistic people. And I think if you listen to our president, Sherilyn Jolly, talk, you'd buy a membership. As far as pulling this crap about we supported this and the railroads, that and the railroads, you're taking one thing out of a whole program and say we supported that. As far as the FRCC, with the short line, we looked at that FRCC thing and it was a joke. They had no business plan. It wasn't going to work. It was going to put one more layer of bureaucracy in a system that has too much in it to begin with. We looked at it as a short line. We didn't want it. And if you want to talk about wheat growers, why don't you go back to what we've... Again, this isn't a debate about wheat growers, but do you like protein premiums on your wheat? Do you like these pricing options that you get? Because those are programs that the wheat growers did get. So if you got a question about the board, fine. But if you want to keep the personal stuff in it, we can dig up lots about Wild Rose or whatever.
I thought I'd get that reaction. If the elected producers, or we have what we do right now is there's a fight between the federal government's vision of what the wheat board is, which they figure they own, and as producers over the last 5 years with elected directors, we feel we own it. Now there's a basic conflict here. Now I kind of wonder where you're standing. If producers have a plebiscite and vote to retain the wheat board, are you going to fight for that right of producers? And
my view is this. I will support a plebiscite when the wheat board has done their due diligence on both sides of the argument. Like they talked about before, $1 million on a document for harvesting opportunities for their way they would come into the market in the future. Granted, it was a single desk system. That they didn't even do any due diligence on how they would convert themselves into a viable option in an open market. 50% of the growers, using their own study, which is skewed with the question, want change, want an open market. Let's take probably 80% of the grain they sell is produced by 20% of the farmers, and I'll guarantee you all 20% of those farmers want an open market. So we want to take the facts, and you talk about a vision. I thought I spent half an hour telling you what I would do. I would have free export permits. I would have new producer payment options. I would have accountability. I've been talking all night about it.
Brian Hildebrand from SCIF. I was looking at the CWV election website, and on the website, the primary role of a CWV director is to act in the best interest of the Canadian Wheat Board. Not in the farmer, producer interest, but in the interest of the Canadian Wheat Board. How would each of you change that?
If you look at any governance mandate in any corporation, that's the director's fiduciary responsibility. That's their number one role that the directors have. Now, when it comes to the CWB, the farmers around that board have also got the mandate that we've given to the CWB, and that's to add value for farmers and to work for farmers. So our part of it is to work for producers, and that's my bottom line. What this is all about is farm income, as far as I can feel about it. I just think we need to do whatever we can to raise the income level for producers. And the fact that the common governance role is that you're responsible to corporation first, well, I see myself being responsible to producers first.
Well, I think, as I said before, the focus of the major core of current directors is to the CWB, sustaining a bureaucracy that needs to be a little leaner and trimmer, and I'll put primary producers first on my list. Because if it works for farmers and we put them on the top of the list, it should be good for the CWB too.
I think if I was to win and had to be sworn in with that question, it would be tough because obviously the way I feel and the way my platform is producers are first, just like they said. But my feeling is that I feel that an open market is the best interest of the Canadian Wheat Board, because if we stay with a single desk, we stay with the status quo, and we do go to an open market, it's not ready. So that's how I feel that by taking this direction in the Wheat Board.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lawrence Nicholson from Seven Persons. And the question I have regards to the task force report on page 10, they define that very clearly, that you're either going to have central desk selling or you're going to have open market. You're not going to have choice. If you look at what the Canadian Wheat Board has now and the things that they've done, you do have choice through the Canadian Wheat Board and how you market your wheat. Lots and lots of choices. If you go to an open market, you've got one choice, open market.
First part, the single desk and the open market, yeah, there's not going to be both. Because different definition, single desk, there is no open market. We, with an open market, you're going to have the wheat board's going to be another competitor. You're going to have 7, 8, 10, 12 people bidding on your grain instead of one. I've seen how that does not benefit the farmer. It's all good. Nothing bad about that, that I can think of. What was the second part of the question?
If you just have a single market on an open market system, you don't have a dual market like you do right now for green wheat board.
Like I said, I'm going to try my best to get rid of the single desk. To be forced into doing anything is wrong. There's no reason. If they've been telling us the truth for 75 years that they have all this benefit, do you think us farmers, like the people who are monopoly, think that farmers must be idiots, that we're going to sell to the lowest price offer? We're going to sell it to the highest price. Whoever's got the highest price, that's where we'll sell. And you guys have been saying for 75 years that's the wheat board. So it means they're going to get all the grain. I don't know what you're worried about.
Larry, would you like to answer, please?
Well, I mentioned in my opening comments that this does clear up the issue, and I think it does. We have a choice, a clear choice here, open market or a single desk. But I do realize the frustration that a lot of people feel within the single desk. They don't have the ability to do some of the things they'd like to do. And I take a little bit back from Conn's statement that the wheat growers are responsible for all the marketing options that the wheat board has, because I don't think that's quite true. I was around the board table when a lot of these were developed, and I know who pushed for them, and I know who didn't. And I'm in favor of giving people as much pricing flexibility as we can without damaging the total value that we get for our grain.
Hi, I'm Michelle Day. I'm a unionist, so I have to come up here. When you mentioned open market, especially, I know it's only 10% with the states, but it makes my little Canadian heart stop. So, Sorry, Gordon. So my question is, Stephen, you already said that there's no foreseen negative aspects of this open market, but I'm pretty sure that's not true. So I would like to hear, how would this trickle down effect for like the average person? Because I'm not a farmer, but I know that this will somehow affect the store buyer in the end.
How is it going to benefit? When you have one person to buy your grain and they get it automatically, how are they going to be? You see it all the time when people are given things, they become, the longer they stay in political power, the more corrupt and more everything, it just happens. When you have that much power over the market, you can't be lean and competitive. You're getting it. There's no reason to be competitive. You're getting it no matter what. So that's bad for farmers. And, as far as the U.S., these people get hung up on the U.S. prices. A U.S. price is a price in India minus the ocean freight, minus the freight from the elevator to the port. That's what a U.S. price is. That's why we use U.S. prices as an example, because it's a world price. And we get hung up that that's all we're going to send our grain to the U.S. and they're going to slam the door shut. It's just all fear-mongering. There's just no truth to it. It doesn't happen.
Good evening, and my name is Dirk Vosfeldt. I farm in the Coaldale area. One of the comments made this evening was that really this whole debate is about farm income, and I would agree. Stephen, I take a little issue with your comment that we're not dummies. If there's 12 guys to sell to, we're going to do better. And I don't really think that's necessarily true. If I talk to a line company and they say canola is on the open market, right? We have more or less multiple sellers, our multiple buyers for our canola. You know, one of them said to me, he said, that's absolutely true. But he says, speaking as an individual and not on behalf of my company, 75% of canola producers don't really do the greatest job of their marketing. I've been involved in a driving industry for most of my farming life. And there was a time that producers wanted more or less an open market. You know, get your money at the gate and follow that option. And to this day, less than 2% of the dry bean producers do so. One of the directors at that time said to me, he says, be careful what you ask for. 90% of the American farmer sells their bean for less than the average price. So all of these things a person does have to take into consideration, of course. I mean, it would be, it's a very interesting debate, but throwing out the single desk, it's so irrevocable. So it is a...
Could you frame your question, please?
It's more of in the line of a comment.
Okay.
But the specific question to Steve was that if there's multiple guys buying my product, I'm bound to get the best price, or the better price, or the higher price.
Okay.
And I dispute that.
Okay.
A few things there. First, I forgot to mention, we did have a plebiscite in Alberta on all this, right? Two-thirds of voters don't want the wheat board here in Alberta. Do you see it changing? So I don't see why we keep wanting to talk about this plebiscite talk. Canola. Canola pays all the bills in our farms. You talk to any farmer. Why is that? It's cash flow. As a young farmer, and I'm going to talk to you as a young farmer, just think for me to start farming, I got to put two crops in and have 2 years of expenses before I'm getting paid for my first one. How am I going to survive? You want to talk about the first, our generation? Forget it. Just think if we had the monopoly on all our grains, there'd be nobody farming our age unless our five generation before us was backing us. It's outrageous that we think that it's reasonable that we don't get paid for a grain for 14 months and take an average. We're getting averaged to death. I just talked about the averages, the high and the lows. The wheat board has been 40 cents below the market since August. What more do we need to hear? All the examples of how the wheat board is doing a bad job. I'm not saying we need to get rid of the wheat board. Everybody takes us when you get the report. That's not it. We need change. We need a better management of the wheat board. If it was a public company or a private company, those directors have been gone long time ago. Because there's been no change, there's been no performance, there's been nothing. Example after example. I don't know how many more examples I need to give. $1.40 to $1.60 a bushel on winter wheat. 80 bushels an acre. Do the math on that.
I think we've gone over time, Steve. So.